Since we have been just sharing a few words on the importance of silence, also after, not only after Kirtan, but silence as a whole. Krishna himself says in the Gita, "False secrets, I'm silence. False secrets, things, I'm silence." Srila Prabhupada, in one purport of the Bhagavatam, says, "Krishna is he who is worshipped by silence." So let's try an alternative Mangalacharan today before starting with our Katha in silence. Instead of reciting certain words and prayers, let's just to be for a few moments, be all together present in silence and trying to open our hearts and selves to whatever needs to be brought today to the table and begging for mercy, for openness, for shelter, for connection. So that will be our silent, powerful Mangalacharan for a few moments now. Shri Satchinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Shri Hari Naam Prabhu Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. Let me see something. So again, welcome to all of you once again. We are in our second day of our retreat, Radical Personalism Retreat. Already feels like a lifetime. in the good sense of the term. So happy to have shared a whole lifetime with all of you already. And we have a few more lifetimes to share, 7 more lifetimes in this week. So today we are born again. We died yesterday to a few things. Born again, maybe a few times during the day. So a few lifetimes yesterday. And probably today again finding a new iterations and versions of ourselves, dying and living. That's how progress takes place. Srila Siddha Maharaj will say that's progress, embracing higher conception, higher possibility, and letting go of the lower conception. That was my highest conception yesterday and was beautiful and highest yesterday. Today, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, today's perfection is tomorrow's imperfection. Not to get neurotic in terms of progress, but just understanding how reality evolves, the nature of unfolding of everything. So it always keeps us in on the move, so to say. So today's topic will be individuation, which corresponds with the second of the last 7 chapters in Radical Personalism. So the name of the presentation is the name of the chapter, Individuation, Carving Out Our Full Humanity in Divine Service. So it's a carving project. God's mercy is like an artist, and it's carving and allowing our best possible self to emerge. And what's the role of humanity in all of this, in becoming all that we can be? But of course, yesterday, just brief recap. I like to make brief recaps, sometimes not so brief. But yesterday we have our vulnerability day, hopefully also vulnerability and empowerment day. Don't forget the second part of the equation, please. So we were talking about that. We started our presentation yesterday morning, also sharing a few words about why a retreat, why the role, importance of getting together, getting this experience of community, family, belonging, and how Sangha association has to promote Sangha with H as community. And that's the very meaning of Sankirtan, something that we can only do together. The fire of Sankirtan, the tapas, the fire of introspection. I like to sometimes translate Sankirtan as collective introspection, because Sankirtan indicates a global, a collective effort. Sam is plural. And kirtan is a fire, Sankirtan yajna. And fire in Sanskrit is tapas. And tapas means fire. When Brahma heard fire, he entered into introspection. So our Sankirtan is another way of saying it's a collective effort of introspection, of going deeper and helping each other, accompanying each other on the journey, in the quest. So anyhow, we talked about retreats, and then we talked about vulnerability and empowerment, and why vulnerability was the first thing to talk about in the whole array of topics. We mentioned how we are vulnerable. It's not so much that I choose to be vulnerable or not, but I choose to acknowledge that I'm vulnerable or not. And what else we talked about? We talked about Krishna being all vulnerable. So if you want to love someone who is all vulnerable, well, his all vulnerability invites us for our own vulnerability. And the importance of putting away masks in terms of our relationship with God. No need for that. He's loving, seeing for who we are and loving us because of that, for who we are. Not so much even despite of who we are. He's loving us for who we are. And we concluded touching upon that important topic. No, we are developed of Krishna. And that's despite whatever situation we may be in, we are unconditionally embraced and accepted. And it's important that we learn to accept ourselves on the basis of his acceptance, his infinite acceptance. And allowing ourselves to be seen by the eyes of his unconditional affection, darshan, darshan. We are being seen by God's glance of love. We concluded with our eye gazing experiment, which proved quite scary but successful at the end. So I'm happy that that was the case. concluding on this emphasis on being as naked, as honest, as sincere as we can. We actually talked about the meaning of sadhu as someone utterly honest, utterly transparent. That's what it means to be a sadhu or sadhvi in female terms. To be utterly sincere, no? And sincere, as I like to say sometimes, for those of you who like etymology and what words mean, yesterday we were talking about respect and a few other things. Sincere, that's a good one also. So I will mention, because it's connected to also to today's topic of individuation. So sincere, or to be sincere, comes from this, we'll talk about that later today, from the Latin sincera. We use that word in Spanish as well. Sincera, sincero. So it comes from the time in which in the Roman Empire, and that time where Latin was spoken, they were having these markets where they will sell blocks of marble for artists to carve. So you will have these artists selling men who were not that honest, that sincere. And they will sell marble blocks, but the marble blocks will have cracks. So they will cover the cracks with white wax. So you wouldn't see the cracks. You would just see something perfect. Quote unquote perfect. So you will go for that one. I want that block. And then you start working. And when you hit the crack, the whole thing is over. No? So there was other section of the market who were more honest. They will sell the piece of marble, including the cracks. And they will say, sincera. Because what? Sin means without, and cera means wax. In Spanish, cera means wax, means you translate as cera, and sin is without. So there was a sincera, no? Without wax. You can see the crackings, and you can work including the crackings, integrating the brokenness of the piece. And you can make your piece of art with brokenness included. So from that place, the word sincera comes, no? That the willingness of showing yourself with your cracking and the willingness to make a piece of art out of that. No, I don't need to discard the cracking for me to be a piece of art, but how do I integrate that and include that in my journey? So we have been talking about that yesterday in terms of vulnerability and empowerment, and we will continue to talk about that today with our topic of individuation, which is very much, as you will see, an extension of talking about vulnerability and empowerment. It's another word to continue talking about, in one sense, the same ongoing conversation. So individuation is a Jungian term, comes from Carl Jung, someone who was a very interesting figure, who had a very interesting He went very deep into his study of Vedanta and Upanishads. He was very aware of Eastern traditions, among other things. He said very interesting things in many interesting directions. I begin the chapter in my book with a quote from him, somehow trying to honor his contribution, as this chapter revolves around many things he talks about, individuation and shadow work. So his quote, as simple and powerful as it is, says, "The privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are." That's a privilege of a lifetime. A life well lived is to become who you truly are. In other words, who you truly are is all that you can be in potential. In one sense, we have been talking about vulnerability as trying to show yourself for who you are, because you are vulnerable. So that's who you are. Accept who you are. And individuation could be all that we can be. On the basis of accepting who am I, part of who am I is I have potential. So part of my potential is all that I can be, all that I can be. In fact, Tatashta Shakti, you want me to close the door? It's a little cold. No? Fine? Okay, no problem. So, sorry. In our tradition, the soul is described as Tatashta. No? And one way of speaking about Tatashta, what's going on?
I just couldn't see Rani Radhavas, but
no,
I'm not.
I was getting it. You were getting concerned. I was getting concerned looking at you. It's like, what's going on? No, she's there. I will close a little bit for myself. Like this. Okay? You tell me if you need that I reopen. So, going back to our main narrative. No, sir, I'm joking. So in Sanskrit, we refer to the soul as Tatashta. And Tatashta is one way of defining ourselves, is, as I like to put it, is we are a unit of potential. So we are something plus all that we can become. Now, Einstein will say this, which very much applies. He said, whenever you define anything, you have defined that thing plus its possibilities. Consider anything in terms of their potential. You follow my point? We are something, but we can be so much more. So all that's part of who we are. So vulnerability can be first, who am I? It's a soul, Tatashta, whatever, who am I? And that includes all that I can be. And then individuation comes into the picture. Because individuation basically means acknowledge your individual existence, integrate all different layers, physical, mental, emotional, even your brokenness, as we will, given the example of sincere, we will continue to give other examples. Try to make all part of the project. No? Individuation is a lot about integration. No. Instead of rejected, we many times walk on life with many rejected parts, like disowned parts. And individuation is a lot about reclaiming those disowned parts, unredeemed parts, and integrating them into a higher version of ourselves. Bhakti has that potential. We can integrate everything basically in the context of bhakti. So we were saying yesterday that God is all vulnerable, and therefore if you want to relate to someone all vulnerable, you have to be vulnerable yourself. In the same way, Krishna is 108% individuated. No, we call him, Srila Prabhupada will call Krishna how? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. He will refer to God as God, the Godhead, the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no? Which implies individuation. Is God in his most blossom form in terms of all that he can be, in terms of his own individuality, his emotional life, his human side? No? Remember, as we will see, God is fully human and fully divine at the same time. Naralila, we'll go there in a few minutes. So Krishna is showing us you can integrate everything and be the highest form of God. I mean, it's not that he's saying you can do that, but he's giving his example. No, I can do that, Krishna says. know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, which allows for vulnerability, you know, as we were talking yesterday, which allows for so many other things that we need to allow in our own situation, in our own way as well. So if we want to connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we have to attain the Supreme Personality of ourselves, right? Because we are someone, we are individuals, but what we are doing with our individuality, how much we are allowing that to blossom, or how much we can be pretty impersonal with our personality. So to say, I'm a person, but how much do I allow the person to flow, to blossom, to flourish? And as long as we are not doing that, or as much as we are not doing that, we can call that rightfully impersonalism, as we were saying many times. So we sometimes are very, find lots of relish in bashing the impersonalist outside of us, but what about the one inside of us? Let's begin with my abad at home. Well, that can be a title, no? My abad at home. Clean your own room first, right? Yeah, because we are talking about radical personalism. We said the opposite of radical personalism is impersonalism. We want to embrace radical personalism, but part of that is acknowledging the impersonal at home, so to say, and do that, do something with that. So again, individuation has to do with integrating, no? Allowing, honoring, even physical realm, mental realm, emotional realm, psychological realm, spiritual realm, all these dimensions, and allowing bhakti to enter into all of them and to spiritualize the whole thing. That's something we have been talking these days. We don't need to reject anything. You don't need even to reject your body. If you engage your body in bhakti in this lifetime fully, there's some clandestine parallel undercurrent going on here. That's for me. Can I read it?
Oh, it's for me. Is it like
no problem?
Business.
But let's try to keep parallel situations as in pause as much as we can, because if not, we get distracted so easily.
Yeah.
If we don't find Anurad on the room, if the dog moves its tail, while we are there. So let's try to honor. Yes. Now you mentioned him. So we were mentioning about individuation and integration, and how bhakti doesn't reject anything. Bhakti is all about integration. So in bhakti, we are not trying to reject. Now, even my body, the so-called body, on some level we can say we are not this body if you have a material conception, but when you connect with bhakti, you receive a sadhaka deha, or body of practitioner. And you have all rights to say, I am that body. Because in that body, I engage in bhakti, and that body becomes fully spiritualized. And in that fully spiritualized body, I will serve Krishna in eternity. So we have a change of perspective then. So my point is, individuation entails integration of all the dimensions of my being. I'm not so much a dichotomy, okay, I'm the soul and all the other stuff has nothing to do with me. But if I learn to integrate all that in bhakti, all that will accompany me in eternity in any spiritualized form. They were talking yesterday, I don't know with whom already, I think it was Manjali and someone else, on this idea that, because I've seen devotees sometimes thinking, okay, my own sense of being person, my own sense of present being and my own personality now, sometimes devotees think, is the exact opposite of who I will be in eternity. And you live your life from that place. And that's not healthy, at least in my opinion. To think whomever I will be forever has nothing to do with what I'm perceiving now. That's a dangerous problem. Follow my point? Instead of feeling, okay, I'm work in progress, and there are still some stuff that I need to learn to integrate for sure. I don't want this to accompany me forever, this particular tendency or whatever. But it's not that the whole thing needs to be dismissed and in Golok I will be 180%, 80 grades, the opposite of who I am now. You follow my point? So it's healthy and important to own our sense of being and integrate that in the context of bhakti. I'll turn on the light. Mm-hmm. So, because I'm getting lost some of my audience here. So we want all of you present. So that's what bhakti is about. Bhakti is not about rejecting body, rejecting mind, rejecting humanity, rejecting anything. As I like to quote Srila Prabhupada, when he was asked by one devotee came to him and told him, Prabhupada, for your sake, I'm willing to reject everything. And Prabhupada looked at him like, peculiar approach, right? I love you so much that I will reject everything for you. Okay. Particular type of love, but anyhow, I'll probably say the only thing you need to reject is the idea that you have to reject anything. That's the only thing to reject. The idea about the whole idea of rejection, that's the rejection part. That's it. So bhakti is not about rejecting. Bhakti is about accepting in a wholesome way. So being a devotee doesn't exclude being human, for example. We don't need to throw our human experience out of the window to be transcendental. No? So I like to make a play of words in the book. We don't want only holiness. We will also want wholeness. No? And two of them integrated, we want that. No? Holiness. No? There's holiness. We want the holiness that doesn't preclude and exclude wholeness. So we want integration. What's the opposite of integration? Disintegration. So you choose which one you want. If we don't engage in the integration work, we are disintegrating ourselves. We are just becoming, again, disjoint parts instead of a whole thing. And tomorrow we'll continue talking about that when we talk about non-dual thinking and how everything's interconnected and integrated, and already complete. If we don't have this approach, again, for us, transcendence ends up making us inhuman. You know, the idea of transcending and being transcendental, if we think of transcendental as rejecting thing, you have to transcend your body, and you translate that, reject my body. You have to transcend this world, reject this world. You have to, again, words, but how we interpret, every time we hear transcend, is reject. So to become transcendental means to become a rejector, basically. A professional rejector. I have attained a PhD in rejecting. I've learned how to reject absolutely everything. But I love Krishna, and Krishna is like, that's not the type of flow I want to have with you, right? Yeah. So in the name of transcendence, we can end up being inhuman, not human, dysfunctional, evasive, and be a tragedy to ourselves and to others. And that's not that was not the original plan in Krishna consciousness. That was not Mahaprabhu's intention, so to say. So I like to say we want to be devotional human beings, not devotional superheroes, devotional Superman or Wonder Woman, all that stuff. No? But human beings, the humanity is a crucial element of the spiritual project. It's not different. No, they are not. There's not transcendental here, human over here. Don't make that dichotomy. I mentioned in the book that our humanity has to put in context our spirituality. And that's the role of humanity. It has to contextualize our spirituality. Spirituality without humanity is spirituality out of context. No, it's not healthy. So we want, part of the individuation project is be a human, be as human as you can be in the context of being a devotee. We want to be, again, we want to love Krishna forever, and Krishna is as human as he is. God being as human as he can be. Let's put it that way. Krishna is God being as human as God can be, reaching the highest point of full humanity while remaining being God, while remaining divine. Nara Lila, again, The Nara Lila of Krishna, Nara Lila Prabhupada translated as human-like pastimes. Mm-hmm. No? So we have to understand what, because again, we hear human-like and what do we get, what we process by the like part, human-like. No, Marcy was like, but it's not human, actually. It's like human. So what it is then? Actually, the Sanskrit is Nara Lila. Nara means human. Nara Lila means human pastimes, period. Us. So Prabhupada adds the like, which I totally appreciate, but we have to understand the like. And the like for me is not so much like, it's human-like. It's not human, actually. It's human-like. It seems, but it's not human. No, those, we say that because we don't know what to do with our own humanity. So don't tell me that it's human because I have my own unresolved stuff and you want me to throw me into a place where God is fully human and I'm half-baked human? Oh my God. So human-like means, in my view, to make sense of the whole thing, the like means fully divine. So he's human-like. Human means fully human. Like means fully divine. So it's human-like in that sense. It's fully human, but it's fully divine. So the like doesn't mean less than human, pseudo-human. It's fully human, but fully divine. To put in context everything else, and as we were saying the other day, The human part of the Leela is what makes the Krishna Leela so charming. You take out the human part, and it's like we are no longer Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And that's what it makes for Gaudiya Vaishnavism. If you take out the human element, we are suddenly in Vaikuntha with Narayan, everyone has four arms, and everything is like extraordinary. Like, wow, why all these guys have four arms? That's not human, that's superhuman. That creates another mood immediately, without respect to Vaikuntha Vasis. But like the example we always give is, I don't know, Krishna as a baby. Why Krishna as a baby is so charming? Why? Why he? What's the difference between him as a baby being charming and any other baby on planet Earth? Which is also charming, as we mentioned yesterday, mm-hmm. for certain reasons. But why Krishna as a baby is particularly charming? He's a baby. Or he's something else. He's God. Also. You follow my point? So he's God, and despite being God, he's a baby. Wow, so charming. No? So it's a particular combination that makes the whole thing. But he's fully human. He's fully divine, and the fully divine allows for the fully human to give a certain taste and attraction and experience. So we want all of them together, not one at the cost of the other. So Nara Lila basically is that. Krishna's Nara Lila, Mahaprabhu's Nara Lila is showing humanity perfectly in place, what it means to be fully human. And to me, fully human also means to be fully divine, because human life is meant for spiritual inquiry, atato brahma jignasa. The human experience finds its zenith in divinity, so to say. So I cannot be fully human without being fully divine, because the human experience tends in that direction. And we cannot be fully divine without being fully human, at least in our sampradaya, which points to the Nara Lila. In other sampradayas, there may have another goal where humanity is not that much of an emphasis. But in our school, sorry guys, you have to be fully human. So, and again, humanity implies, as we talk these days, vulnerability, frailty. And that's even fine in the Leela, as we said the other day. There is vulnerability, its own version of it in the Leela. Eternally on a daily basis, Krishna dying in separation, that's vulnerable. So if there's vulnerability there, there's humanity, there's frailty. Even there is so-called imperfection, if you want to put it that way, in the Leela. Quote-unquote, don't get nervous, please. No? No? But Krishna is being bounded by his mother. No? That seems pretty limited, no? Like a boy bounded and he's crying. Seems pretty imperfect, quote unquote. But that's perfection. Perfection, as I remember once talking with Richard Rohr, he told me, perfection must include imperfection, not exclude imperfection. real perfection must include imperfection, must embrace imperfection into its fold and make it something else. Real perfection cannot exclude imperfection. If perfection excludes imperfection, that's an imperfect perfection, so to say. So all this happens, again, in the Lila. We find vulnerability, frailty, some form of imperfection in the context of perfection. So we have to allow all the things in our life for us to go there. And that's part of individuation. Again, to allow frailty, vulnerability, brokenness, as we were given the example of the sincera, of the marble. And sometimes we need, again, to do some journey and meet our unredeemed parts and try to integrate them into our bhakti project. Our devotional enterprise is not so much only about ascending and transcending, but also about descending. We may need to do some descent work. Many times we are more about like ascending and transcending. Ascending, meritocracy, deserving, being perfect, showing off, performing, ascending even on the ladder of hierarchical ladder of whatever, the social dynamics, ascending, and transcending, rejecting, transcending, quote unquote. But first, why not descend? Why not confront our subconscious? Why not pay a visit to the shed that has taken a life of its own, as we say yesterday? That's where Mahaprabhu starts. The only written legacy of Mahaprabhu is Shikshastaka, first verse of Shikshastaka, first word of Shikshastaka, first line of Shikshastaka, Chetu Darpana Margin. So Chetu means Chitta, and Chitta could be translated in contemporary language as this subconscious mind. So the first word of everything that Mahaprabhu ever says starts with subconscious. Like putting that into the picture. There's something called subconscious. And what do you need to do with that? Dharpana marjanam. You have to clean the mirror of your subconscious. In other words, in Jungian terms, it's do shadow work. No? That's an interesting expression. Integrate the shadow. Shadow is those parts of my psyche or my invisible body that I don't want to see. I don't want anyone else to see. And they have become very nicely hidden in the shed to the point that I lost sight of them. So I lived like if that's not existing, but it's probably those are the main influencing forces that are moving me like a puppet as a conditioned being. So part of the practice of bhakti, as Mahaprabhu will say, entails confront your shadow. One of the effects, the seven effects of the holy name mentioned in this first verse of Shikshastaka is your subconscious will come to the surface. You will engage in Harinam Sankirtan, and the things you've tried so hard to hide for eons will start to emerge. So, and don't get concerned, like, oh, I'm worse than before I started now. I'm feeling all this stuff, all these things are coming. No. It's part of the symptoms that the whole thing is working. You are being invited to confront what you have been avoiding for lifetimes. So you are being invited to be courageous. You are being invited to be sincere, honest, all these words we are using. So, and to be willing to see what we need to see and to show ourselves for who we are and stop the hiding game, basically. No? And hopefully someday live our lives in a way that we don't need to have a private life, so to say. Private in the sense of I don't want things to be seen by this guy and that guy, and we can be okay for who we are. And again, Chitu Darpana Marjanam. Try to do some shadow work. Try to engage with your shadow. Try to befriend your shadow. No? The shadow is frightening and terrifying as long as we don't want to confront it. Like all these famous myths or stories from different traditions with the dragon. Confront the dragon. And as long as you don't want to confront the dragon, and you don't want to open the door, the dragon keeps getting bigger and bigger, more scary. The moment you confront the dragon disappears. So the moment you shed light on those, how to say, of those estranged parts of you that are hidden and are influencing you a lot because you are unaware of them, the moment you shed light on those things, they no longer exert the same influence, so to say.
You're unaware of them?
Sorry, again?
You said we're unaware of them.
I mean, we have hidden them so much that we lose sight that they are there. It's not that we're absolutely unaware, but we have been very much distracted from them. And practically for all intents and purposes, we are unaware of them. And we need to bring awareness. Sometimes I made also in the book the play of words about Krishna consciousness. But before Krishna consciousness, let's deal with our unconsciousness. Because we have to do something with that. And again, Mahaprabhu said, Chetu Darpana Marjana. So there is something called unconscious. And let's not, how to say, of course, we can engage in bhakti, and so much of our subconscious can become redeemed and healed even without our awareness. But I wouldn't say that's a that's an excuse just to say, I just chant my rounds every day and magically at the end of the day or the year or my lifetime, everything's in place. No, Krishna also wants us to have some voluntary willingness to investigate and confront and work with and integrate what needs to be integrated. And not just magical thinking on autopilot mode, chanting and magic thing, subconscious healed, and I'm just reaching my 16, my daily 16, that's it. Don't ask for more. No? So yeah, individuation has to do with acknowledging our unconscious, acknowledging our broken parts. As we say before, acknowledging the cracks in the marble and being willing, trusting that in potential, there is a work of art waiting for me in that crack. In my wounds can heal me. Paradoxical language. You have to be healed by the wound, through the wound. You have to go through the healing through the wound. The piece of art is through the crack. That's the type of thinking we need to develop. Paradoxical thinking. Sounds counterintuitive, but it's how reality operates in its most intimate level. Example that also sometimes I like, very similar to the one of the marvel, is the kintsugi. Have you heard about kintsugi? Mm-hmm. Japanese art? I will give an example without breaking anything. Let's imagine we have this plate and the plate just like breaks. Most of us, if a plate like this breaks, in our Western tradition, is let's hide and throw this, discard this as soon as possible. We don't want anyone to see brokenness. We don't want to see brokenness. We don't like to see something broken. So just like it's broken, throw it. Get a new one, fancy, perfect one. What they do in Japan with kintsugi, they take all the broken pieces, they put them together, and they fill all the cracks with liquid gold. So they highlight the brokenness. And say each this has a story. The brokenness is part of the story this plate has to tell. We will highlight all these scars with gold. Now it's part of the testimony this plate has to tell us. So instead of throwing out, dismissing, hiding, camouflaging, brokenness is like, let's shed light on that as something glorious. And it's an art. They consider that a work of art to do that. So in the same way, our frailty, even if we say we are emotionally frail beings, yes, welcome to the club. And like the cracks in the kintsugi, your emotional frailty enhances the wholeness of your spiritual journey, the wholeness part, the part of integration, of acceptance, of allowing everything to be. As we were talking also yesterday, I think with Radha Priya and some others in the table, we were talking about this prayer of Kunti Vi Padasantatsasvatatratatra Jagat Guru, which may be interpreted as more misery, more misery. Let suffering come. And it's like, let's be masochists, all of us. No, no, that's not what the verse is about. No. We were interpreting that, knowing how, in asking for problems or obstacles or however we may like to interpret the verse, pain is coming and pain is opening our heart in order to receive love. Richard will say, great love and great pain keep our heart open. So many times we need pain. Now, whether we are calling for that, if we are not calling for that, it will come, no problem. And we don't need to reject that. We don't need to get away of those emotions. But we need to allow them to heal us. Pain can heal us also. Pain has a lesson to tell us. Don't reject your pain only you have learned your lesson from that particular Gurudev. Pain is Gurudev also. Pain. Guru is everything. Guru Tattva is everywhere. That's how I like also to speak about. And we're just about to go to one exercise, but two more thoughts in this connection. Anartha Nivritti. No? When we speak about Anartha Nivritti, I don't like to think about Anartha Nivritti just as like, again, I practice or I chant or I do whatever, and magically the Anarthas go away. Like a byproduct of bhajana kriya of my practice. But also Anartha Nivritti is the willingness to remain and become and remain aware of what needs to be dealt with. That's also Anartha Nivritti. The willingness to confront what I have not healed, what I have not integrated. That's Anartha Nivritti. Shadow work. Again, the willingness to have a conversation with my shadow, to have a cup of tea. We are in UK here. To have a cup of tea with my shadow. That's a culturally sensitive explanation of an art and everything. invite your shadow for tea.
More gentle than confrontation.
Okay. Yeah. Again, it's a word that may carry, because the word confrontation is not a bad word. In fact, confrontation is just to put in front of me what has been hidden who knows where. I understand if you need some other word, it's totally fine. But also, I feel it's necessary that we redeem each one of those terms so we realize, oh, they were not as bad as I thought. No? Confrontation, speculation, basically probably every single word. So, but yeah, that's basically the idea. If you don't like confrontation, have a cup of tea. That may be more inviting for most people. Let's have a cup of tea. Let's sit for confrontation. Yeah. You end up confronting after. It's a confrontation. Having a cup of tea is a confrontation. It's putting in front of us what needs to be put in front of us. And in that sense, it's an actual, expression of love. But it's interesting how confrontation ideally is an expression of love, but we will feel like attack, no, like violence, confronting us, whatever. So part of this cup of tea invitation and integration of all these parts is also, again, allowing our, and I'm here touching briefly, as you can imagine, I'm trying to summarize a whole chapter of my book, so please don't think that I've said it all. Not even in the book, of course, but trying to touch upon some of the main themes. And one of them, as you may recall, is we have to allowing all in the integration process of individuation is allowing for what I like to call emotional intimacy, to cultivate intimacy with my own emotions instead of cultivating, again, estrangement and isolation. And rejection. There are no bad emotions. That's what we were exploring in the book. There are bad things you do with your emotions, but not bad emotions. Emotions are not good or not bad. Emotions are. What you do with them, that's the whole thing. No? Even an emotion like anger is not bad in itself. It's necessary. It's a necessary expression of something, can lead you to establish healthy boundaries, so many things. No? Of course, with anger, you can also become bitter and resentful, and that's not a good thing you're doing with that emotion. But emotions are not bad. There are, but what do we do? And if you don't agree with me, hopefully you agree with Srila Prabhupada. Because he says, page 188 and 89, depending on our level of a spiritual advancement or consciousness, we can control emotions, but we should not deny them. Anger will continue even in the liberated stage. Dhruva Maharaj is becoming angry, overwhelmed with grief, etc., was not incompatible with his position as a great devotee. It is a misunderstanding that a devotee should not be angry or overwhelmed by lamentation. There you have it. If you have some issues with that, you can have a cup of tea with Srila Prabhupada. So he will be happy to have that with you for sure. So this way we are seeing where acharyas are not promoting self emotional or sensual repression, but proper expression. If there is repression, no wonder the word repression runs very close to depression. You are depressed, maybe something is repressed. You push down, depressed, and instead of healthy expression. And the Bhagavad Gita itself, chapter 3, verse 33, Krishna is speaking about, he makes a rhetorical question. What can be gained by repression? Like implying nothing. And when Krishna advocates sense control, that's another expression. Sense control, and many of us have a certain take on that, what it means to be sense controlled. But for me, that means healthy emotional expression. Sense control, control, balance, be balanced. And sense includes emotions, because one of the six senses is the mind, and emotions happen in the mind. So sense control means emotional control. Emotional control doesn't mean like you became suddenly like a cyborg or something. I have emotional control. You have no emotions now. So have a healthy, balanced emotional life. That means to be sense controlled. And then he talks about that, and then he says this. What can you gain by repression? Like implying one thing is not the other. Don't conflate sense control with repression. That's not sense control. And of course, to learn to coexist with our emotions, to learn to sit with our emotions, not to sit on top of our emotions, but with our emotions, extends to all the other dimensions of our present sense of identity. How to properly relate with my mind, with my emotions, how to properly relate with my body. Like it or not, many of us have a very awkward relationship with our body, if we have any relationship at all. Because many times, if not, we end up stigmatizing all that. We develop this negative idea of, we are not this body, the body's matter, material world is bad, let's leave this place as soon as possible. Therefore, matter is entangling, body is entangling, mind is entangling, emotions are entangling. Family life is, of course, inferior, because it's not renouncing everything. I'm being sarcastic, just in case. Just clarifying. And again, all the things. Body's bad, family life is bad, children are bad, sexuality is bad, and all these type of things, which I don't agree with. And it's not only me, it's about I'm trying to base my opinions of what Shastra is saying, our acharyas are saying. Even sexuality, I won't go into sexuality, that's a whole different retreat we need for that. But there's a place for healthy sexuality, to nourish your human side and in emotional intimacy if you have that particular nature. So I like to say sexuality is not limited to biological union, but sexuality is all about connection, intimacy, creativity. So those things can be expressed in so many ways. I have to express my sexual energy some way if I don't want to become a dysfunctional monk, right? Really, that's true. So that's a big concern. I mean, I have to do something with that energy, creative energy, Kriya Shakti, you can call it. So again, any of these things are bad. Emotions, body, family life, whatever, nothing is bad. We can do bad things with all that stuff, but it's not they are inherently, intrinsically damned or something. So we need to have to integrate all this, to have sattva. Sattva means balanced. Prabhupada emphasized so much. First sattva, and then we can talk about transcendence. Now, if you are a dysfunctional human being, don't come to me with the, let's go to the deeper sections of the Bhagavatam and into the erotic union of Radha and Krishna, and you are a disjointed psychology and emotionality. Now, how you will enter into the eternal emotional life of God if your own emotional life is like fractured? No, it's not the same, but at the same time, it's not entirely different. No, so we have to have a wholesome emotional life to be able to grasp what's the life of a place that is made of emotion. Now, the spiritual world is made of bhava. Bhava means emotion. We want to enter a planet of emotion. Imagine. I want to live forever in a planet where everything is emotionally constituted. Everything is made of emotion. The land is made of emotions. The earth, the trees, everything is made of love. So I have to have my emotional play, my emotional life in place on some level. On some level. I'm not saying that's preliminary to practice bhakti. I'm not saying that. I'm saying just they go hand by hand. It's not that because now I'm a Gaudiya Vaishnava, I don't need to deal with my emotions. I just finish my rounds and Krishna takes care because he's so merciful, of course. He's so merciful that he wants you to take care of your emotions. He wants you to grow, to take responsibility. Because if not, we use our own tradition as an escape valve and like, let's go to the 10th canto, let's go to Leela, let's go to the deeper thing. But how deep you have gone into the basic stuff. So I always like to recall Srila Siddhar Maharaj in that connection. He will many times speak not so much about high things, but about basic things in the deepest possible way. I mean, he could speak about high things, but many times he knew that was not the moment for that. So let's go to the most basic stuff and let's talk about it in the deepest possible level. And it's like, okay, that's creating a better foundation for gradually getting to the higher topics, so to say, right? So a few thoughts to begin with. We are warming up. The topic of individuation and integration. So we will do an exercise now, but we will continue after the exercise. No? Yeah. So what's the exercise about? I know you all want more eye gazing, but that you can do it independently, right? Don't wait for me giving blessings and like, okay, you can do it now. You can just go and gaze. No? Yeah. Yeah. So we'll do some shadow integration exercise. So how many are we? Just let me count. 1, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Okay. We have pairs. So the idea of this exercise is try to connect vulnerability. We have talked about that yesterday. And individuation by trying to embrace the neglected parts of the self. So the idea is there are two parts of the exercise. So one part will be done by each of us separately, and then we will join in pairs for the second part. So the first part, do you all have for writing paper, pen? So the first part will be, pay attention, 1 second. Write down like one trait, you can say in English, trait that you have repressed, that you somehow know you have repressed, whether it's anger, sadness, I mean, there will be more than one, but you pick one. And just try to reflect for a few minutes. Maybe we'll do that 4 or 5 minutes. Reflect how you can integrate that repressed trait in a healthy way. How you can make that part of your project. How you pour liquid gold in that cracking, so to say. And then after those minutes, we'll pair up. So today we'll create, I will choose pairs. And we will be, the idea will be that each other will be discussing. Maybe we may need to go to other rooms because all of them talking in one room will create a cacophony and it will be too much. Not so far, please. And we'll discuss maybe for 10 more minutes, like with each other, how those traits can be seen as opportunities for growth rather than obstacles, no? Like trying to redeem the so-called obstacle and see how that's a window of opportunity. It's clear kind of the idea of the exercise? Mm-hmm. Okay. No, it's part of the intention is to, again, try to embrace imperfection, embrace humanness. We want to go to Narlila, which is filled with all that in its own way. So integrating that. Okay, so 5 minutes for writing here. We can stay here and each one can write down one trait, main trait you feel somehow it's still repressed. Okay. Okay. Time for bathroom. And reflect on how you can integrate the trait in a healthy way. And in 5 minutes we return. They are coming, they are coming. Bhaktaras and Anuradha, they are coming. Okay. They need some extra minutes, so it's okay. We have to know when to break the rules. So we can continue a few more minutes. I mean, of course, we are almost reaching the end. We've got 15 minutes till 12, trying to keep things in place. But I hope the sharing was fruitful. It's always fruitful. Again, you can see just hopefully you're getting a very clear message and experience that when no matter what, where we are or what we don't know, what we feel, if we are honest and sincere in a conversation, so always there's always magic happening, redemption and healing and connections. So that's for me something very much related to, again, to individuation, because individuation is not just like a selfish project. Look, I have to individuate myself and it's all up to me, but also we need each other so much for that to happen in order to reach my ultimate potential and all that I can be. I need all of you, no? Like the other day, yesterday, I think last night, Bhaktarasa was telling me because of, in relation to yesterday's lecture, she was like, Maharaj, your lectures these days were like, something like that. I'm telling that she's not here now. And I was the immediate reaction, and it was nice because she also reacted. I was like, yeah, but it's all because of who I have with me in this moment. No, it's not independent, right? Because, and she always like, almost like when I was saying that, she was saying the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not independent from one thing. I remember once Srila Siddhar Maharaj also was talking, and Bhakti Sundar Maharaj will tell Prabhupada's disciples that Govinda Maharaj was with Srila Siddhar Maharaj from so many years, but he will tell the Prabhupada's disciples, like, Guru Maharaj is talking all the things we never heard about, the things, no, all these realizations and things that there are coming. You are bringing those things from his heart by your own sincerity and your own presence. No, so, and he was saying, like, we never heard all the things coming now. So this part, the credit goes in part to you as well. In that sense, it's 50-50 project, so to say. We're all in this together. So I'm making this point because, again, when we talk about individuation, it can, if not seen as an isolated ego thing, okay, have to work. Of course, we have to do our part. But as you have seen in this exercise, also how much more can be drawn and come by receiving feedback, listening, and even just expressing to someone else, and, oh, I'm saying these things. I never thought about them. No? So that's the magical alchemy of relationships, so to say. No? And in that connection, a few concluding thoughts. We can, in my book, I use this analogy of bonsai. No? Yeah. So bonsai is something that was somehow, it had the potential to be a big tree, but it was confined in a certain way and it ended up being a bonsai. So we want to be a bonsai in terms of, how to say, a miniature of a potential giant. No? Individuation entails reaching our potential giant, but we can end up being a miniature version of all that we can be. So I like to use the analogy of the bonsai and the, how do you say in English, the bouquet. No? Like a flower blossom, beautiful offering. I like showing the blossoming of our own personality and individuality by the grace of the environment. So I like this analogy of bouquet or bonsai. No? You make your pick, so to say. And the individuation, of course, has to do with with the option of flourishing and blossoming. And in that connection, I like to connect with something that we touched yesterday, but briefly a little bit more reflection on that before we conclude, which is belonging and fitting in. Yes. Because I think this is an important crafting of this same point. No. Bonsai means fitting in. No? Like I become less of what I am, I have to be what I'm not to fit in. No? The bonsai. Bouquet, no? Belonging, all that I can be. So, and again, we are all desperate for belonging, even when we are joining a gang in the street, and it's just you want to belong, you want to be in a group, whatever. Even when you are gossiping, not praising gossip, but when you get together, it's just we are looking for the experience of belonging. Of course, in the wrong place, in the wrong way. Right. But at the end, behind that is just this, the craving for belonging, which again is tied to individuation and the bouquet and being who we are, no? In contrast with the bonsai version of fitting in. And remember, there are two very different words. Belonging and fitting in are not the same word. We all want to belong, but sometimes we compromise our belonging by fitting in, by not allowing our individuation to blossom. So true belonging invites us to be who we are and to be all that we can be. And fitting in invites us to be the exact opposite of that. A few quick brainstorming. What would you say that allows, I've said a few things, but I want to hear your thoughts. What allows for the experience of belonging? What would you say? Just brainstorming ideas. What?
Feeling of love.
Authenticity.
Authenticity, love,
opening the heart,
trust, opening the heart,
acceptance,
compassion. And remember, all the things you are saying are two-way street, right? Not only to others, but to ourselves as well. No?
Sincerity.
Empathy. Yeah.
Patience
with each other. Yes.
Revealing oneself.
The art of listening.
Yeah, we have already like 108 more new seminars to have. So, we have engagement for the next century, so see you there. Yeah, beautiful. And now let's go to the opposite. What allows for fitting in, so to say? Of course, the exact opposite of everything you say, but how you will express that in a direct way? What?
Repression of emotions.
Yeah.
Becoming smaller.
Okay.
Conforming.
Judgment. Yeah. Judgment.
Pretense.
Not speaking out.
Yeah, you can say it again, no problem. Repression. We needed to hear a few times. Yeah.
Feeling of falsity.
Fear.
Shaming, shame culture, a culture of shaming.
Being an actress,
okay.
Over-idealizing.
Self-censorship. You kind of police yourself.
Living an eye to yourself.
And as you can see, and I think all of us can see while we are saying all these, which are all totally true and perfect and powerful words that come with realization, all of these things can play out in the context of spiritual environment. I assume that every word you said was accompanied by some experience or reflection connected to our own life and culture and practice. So many of this fitting in, my point is, many of this bonsai-ness can be connected, can happen in a spiritual, not only can happen in a spiritual context, but can be reinforced in certain spiritual circles. No, like that's the norm. No? Conform, bonsai yourself, so to say, right? So just to conclude with the reflection, I'd like to share one very nice quote from Srila Prabhupada that I came to know recently. I mean, I read it many times, but now came in a new way from the first verse of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that recently Dhanya shared in her talk on emotional fluency. So Prabhupada said, in terms of basically spiritual bypassing, as I put in my book, sometimes, ironically, practicing spiritual life can be the best excuse not to practice spiritual life. Like, I'm practicing, I'm a devotee, and you take all that to become a professional evader of all the things you need to confront. Srila Prabhupada say, one second, we can just pay attention. Sorry?
Srila Prabhupada said.
You can look for the verses, third chapter, verse number one. So no need chapter three, verse number one. All Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness or Buddhi Yoga or intelligence in spiritual advancement or knowledge as something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerity in a secluded place. We know Arjuna wants to run away from the battlefield, representing us. In other words, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. There you have it, spiritual bypassing in the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, it's there, it's all there. Maybe we never read that, but that's there. That's Prabhupada's purpose. No?
Arjuna probably chose not to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to blame and to chastise ours. It was not the moment. But that's there. You can then, I imagine all of you now we are going and looking for it. So Arjuna, which is not Arjuna, which is Swami Padmanabha, which is Jamuna Bhaktirasa, each one of us, wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. So the fighting, of course, the fighting is what we have been talking today, the confrontation with the unconscious, the integration of complexity, as I like to sometimes describe individuation, integrate complexity, the sense of, that's a mess, I don't want to do that. It's like going to battle, no? Opening the shed, no? It's fight. It's a type of Purukshetra that I need to engage with, no? So, no? So all that is the fighting of the Gita also. It's not just literally Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and what's our fight, what's our battle, what's our fear, what's our confrontation. And he wants to very skillfully avoid those battles by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. No, so Krishna consciousness is not to be used as an excuse to avoid the battle of individuation in this case, but actually Krishna consciousness is to promote. It's all about that. So that's basically the idea, no? To embrace proper individuation, to become all that we can be, to go through all the battles we need to go through, and to know that we are not alone in that battle, although it's a personal battle. We have our army, our Pandava support here, and here, and not only here. So again, as we mentioned, individuation is an individual process, but also we need the support and the affection of our like-minded flocks of the same feathers flocking, flowing, flying together. So anyhow, some concluding thoughts. I didn't want to make it long, but some connection quickly with belonging, fitting in connection to also the analogy of the bonsai and the fitting in and the belonging and the individuation and the bouquet and the flourishing and the blossoming that we are all meant to become. So that's it, almost 12. So are there any questions, something that you may like to share? Today, later, we will have in the evening circle work, so it may not be so much in terms in Q&A format, but in its own way, questions will be presented and answers will come in their own. But if you have any questions that you may like to share, we don't have that much time, but I will try to briefly reply. And then we have one homework for during the day also. Jamuna.
It's just a quick thing. It's just a reflection on what you were saying in regards to Arjun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I've heard that, but I've not related to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, yeah, Arjun, what a rascal. That's how I heard it. Just see what a rascal Arjun was. It's like, Arjun's out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But never actually relating it to, oh, my goodness, this is me.
Yeah. Has nothing to do with Arjun.
Yeah.
He's an eternal associate. Yeah. He doesn't need to see that. He has no problem.
That's how it was.
I get the point. Yeah. That's so important.
So thank you.
No, please. Thank you, Prabhupada. He made the point very clearly. Yeah. Yeah, we have to make our reading of scripture like relatable, no? Like about not because I'm self-centered, narcissistic, and it's all about me, but in the sense of how that is speaking not only to me, but about me. How whatever, Bhagavad Gita, whatever I'm connecting, what's that talking to me? Because if not, it becomes irrelevant. It's just an old text that doesn't apply to me. I don't connect. And
it's impersonal, and we're trying to make it personal.
Yeah, so we have to make it personal. How the Bhagavad Gita is talking, not only to me, but about me. Thank you. Something else, Sadhguru Radhika?
Question. Actually.
Yes.
So you were saying about Krishna's Naralila pastimes.
Mm.
So
Naralila, Lila means pastime.
Yes, sorry. So I was thinking like that sounds like when he's on earth, then there is like human like Naralila. And then does that mean in Goloka Vrindavan it's different?
No.
So there is like the humanness like over there too, only that then Vaikuntha like Vaikuntha is superhuman. I mean, because you mentioned in Vaikuntha there's like four arms and like,
yeah,
like,
but that's not Goloka Vrindavan, that's Vaikuntha with Narayan.
So I was asking then outside of Goloka Vrindavan it's like not so much human.
Yeah, let's put it away. The further you go from Goloka Vrindavan, the more arms grow in you. More heads, more arms. You go further than that, you go to Brahmalok, you have three more heads. And then you continue going down, and you are back here, and we are human again. We make full circle. So.
So in that sense, it's like really special to be on Earth being humans. Because
Absolutely. I mean, we have nowhere else to go. As I mentioned in the last chapter of the book, we will get there on the seventh day, on Earth in heaven. But the idea is to make full circle and realize we have nowhere to go. Here's everything. Everything we need is here. And even if you want to speak about Golok, Krishna is coming over and over again on planet Earth to perform his Lila. He finishes one Lila, he goes to another planet Earth. So he remains on Earth forever, literally. So there must be something quite cool about being on planet Earth. So why so much neurosis about leaving, right? So Planet Earth Ki Jai. Something else?
Where does the idea that transcendence means rejection? Where does it come from? Because I was remembering that when I was about 16 before I knew about Krishna consciousness, I was on a bus and I saw a car pull into a petrol station, and a devotee man jumped out of the car and his dhoti was flying in there. It was a very theatrical moment when he moved. And I remember seeing him with a car, and I thought they were supposed to have material things like cars. And I was 16, I don't even know where that came from. Why do we think that? What is that?
Oh, that's a good question, of course. Difficult to reply in a few minutes, but it deserves its whole treatment. But I will say that, and I'm not saying that everyone thinks like that, but for those who think like that, sometimes we conflate transcendence with rejection of this world, because sometimes, whether unconsciously, whether previous lifetimes, some scars, each case is unique. But I will say many cases we kind of develop this type of logic, like, okay, I'm here on earth, material world, and I want to go to heaven with God. So on earth, things are in a certain way. It means that there is somehow opposite to this. Again, it's our own logic. No, so whatever is here over there, it cannot be like this. So if I want to go here, somehow or other, I must get rid of this, because over there things are different. So you start to renounce and reject and transcend, mm-hmm. and have this idea that spirituality is as transcendence must be the opposite of this. No? And dualistic thinking. Yeah, tomorrow we'll be talking about non-dual thinking. So again, I'm not saying in every case that's the case, but I've seen that enough as to infer in most cases that may be the case, even to the extreme, not in our tradition, but in traditions like radical non-dualism, like impersonalism, they will say, if there are forms here, they cannot be forms there then. Yeah. If the whole thing is perfect there and here's imperfect, okay, whatever is here, it cannot be there. So forms cannot be there, relationship cannot be there, individuality cannot be there. It has to be categorically entirely the opposite, which is not our tradition, but still we carry some taste of that in the form of conceiving things in terms of rejection, because this is not what is there. But in our bhakti tradition, what we are talking about, the Nar Lila and all these type of things, it's very much the opposite. It's kind of a full circle and being on earth and seeing saving paradise. I watch all the videos, by the way. Very nice. Yeah. So we have a very sometimes distorted idea of paradise, which becomes something more like a, as I like to say, our notion of salvation sometimes is an evacuation plan to the afterlife. No, has nothing to do with here. We have to leave, and we'll talk about that in the last meeting. But Gaudiya Vaishnavism teaches not any form of rejection, renunciation, but just perfect integration, and everything is here and now. No need to go anywhere. But as I like to say, we just need to continue to arrive. You just don't need to go somewhere else. Just continue to arrive. Okay, I'll put a pause here, and I will share with you the homework before we conclude. So if I extended a few minutes. So our homework will be connected to the last point I mentioned on the bouquet bonsai. We will make a bouquet bonsai visualization, so to say. So it's to be done throughout the day. You don't need, there's not a fixed time for the first part. So the objective of the exercise is to explore the differences between fitting in and belonging. We have already been talking a little bit, but to continue the reflection, the difference between fitting in and belonging. So the idea is that you, the first part of the exercise, you draw, we'll get artistic a little bit. You draw in a page or something like a bouquet and a bonsai. Nobody will show it to anyone. So allow your artistic expressions to go in any direction. So, of course, the drawing of the bonsai is representing restricted growth, the fitting in. So it's a symbol to invoke all that conveys. And then the bouquet, which represents flourishing in individuation, belonging. So you can draw these two on a page. And of course, after the drawing, you can reflect by your own for a moment on what's for you, each one of those, like situations where you've tried to fit in, and why you've tried to fit in, and what's the result of that in a healthy way, again, hopefully in a healing way. But also then go to the bouquet and reflect on situations where you've experienced true belonging. So try to make it like some personal meditation. And then the last part of the exercise will be that we'll select one partner. We'll make, again, partnership, and you can discuss like your own experience of going through that particular meditation and sharing whatever you feel you would like to share after your own personal part of the exercise. Yeah, it's clear. So I can select pairs. And you then arrange among yourself when you meet and join, ideally before the evening meeting. Whatever moment you do it, you choose it. First you do the drawing and do your part, and then you select for yourself. So to conclude here, let me see if anything else. No, we'll conclude here. And today at 6 we meet for kirtan directly. Then circle sharing, and tomorrow morning we meet for our third lecture, will be on non-dual thinking. We'll be talking about interconnection and relationality with a common center, and the opposite of that, some contrast about separateness, how the sense of separateness creates basically all the problems. Well, that's the problem, and everything else is a symptom of that problem, so we'll reflect together on that. So thank you so much again for your contribution, your presence. Sri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai, Gaur Pramananda. Vancha Kalpataru Vishra Kipasindu Hye Vachapati Thanam Avanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo.